This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly.
This episode of Know-How is brought to you by Harry's. For guys who want a great shave experience for a fraction of what you're paying now. Right now, you can get $5 off one of their shave sets, including the limited edition Father's Day set. Just go to harrys.com/knowhow. And by Blue Apron, the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. See what's on the menu this week and get 3 meals free with your first purchase and free shipping by going to blueapron.com/knowhow. Today on Know How,
3 dumb routers.
It's a Twitch show where we build, bend, break, and upgrade. I am Father Robert Ballas here.
And I'm Brian Burnett.
And for the next however many minutes it takes, we're going to be like the big router in the sky routing packets into your brain.
So I hope you have a gigabit connection because packets are coming. Knowledge is coming.
I'm dial up.
Yeah,
that's what
beep,
I got.
Boop, boop. Just hear the connection sound.
You know, there's a whole generation watching the show who has no idea what you're talking about. Folks.
You know what?
Let's a campfire song. Gather around with Cranky Hippo and Padre. We're going to tell you the story about when we were growing up. Mm-hmm. The way that you got on the internet was first you would have to yell up the stairs, "Mom, I'm getting on the internet," and then you would dial like with the phone, the telephone connected to your computer, and then you would go really slow.
You know what? I right at the tail end of my me and Alex are in the generation where we in high school. That was us. Because we would be playing Doom, and then my mom would pick up the phone, like, "Mom, we're right in the middle of playing a game."
In high school, in postgraduate school, that was me.
Oh, so like, was that 1900s, early 1900s?
Yes, our original modems were delivered by horse and buggy. It was fantastic. It was wonderful, Brian. Thank you for reminding me. But we're not here to talk about modems. We're here to talk about the newfangled technology, specifically...
With old routers.
This is actually why we brought that in here. These routers actually were created right about the time that there were people still using modems. In fact, I have a version of this that has a modem built into it so that you could have it as the primary connection to the internet.
And how would you start one of those? Is there like a hand crank or something
on there? You know, pull chain.
Oh, yeah, like a lawnmower?
No, folks, okay, the thing is, technology has changed a lot over the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. However, the project that we're doing today is looking at the technology that you might already own and looking for a way to repurpose it, specifically with the 3 dumb router setup. Now, we've talked about this before.
We have. This is the idea that Steve Gibson came up with, right? And it's a way of segmenting your network to protect yourself.
Yeah. Now, let's talk about why that works. Why does it work to segment yourself? Now, for many, many years, we designed our networks around a security concept that was called perimeter security. Mm-hmm. Very simple idea. If you look at it right here, this is the internet.
What is this?
This big cloud thing.
It's I am the giant internet.
It's the big brain. Exactly. So the big brain is the internet. And the whole idea is you get the ability to connect this to your network. Mm-hmm. All you have to do is put a wall around your network. You make sure that one connection is protected and everything inside will be protected. That's perimeter security.
Yeah, you should just draw some like nice little flowers and puppies inside of that circle because nothing bad will ever happen.
Just a big sign saying, "Hey, no, stop, let's cut it out."
Only
cut
good things out in here.
That worked for the longest time because we weren't all that sophisticated with our networks and attackers hadn't yet learned how to exploit different ways into a network.
Right.
The problem is using this assumes one huge, huge thing, and that is that everyone on the inside is a good guy.
A good actor or a bad actor sort of thing, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And unfortunately, we know that that's not the case. What will happen is you will often get people inside your network who, A, might do something they're not supposed to do. They might access something they're not supposed to access. Right. Or B, you might have clients, individual devices, computers, tablets, whatever you've got, mm-hmm. that are infected. And if they're infected, they will act in a certain way to reach out into the network and see what's there. If you're still running the perimeter security model, you have nothing to check for that because you're still working on the assumption that once you're past the firewall, you're a good guy.
That's a bad assumption. Which, the WannaCry, which we talked about, exploits that certain thing, that it would get inside of a network and then propagate inside of that, finding other machines.
Right, exactly. And now with this, we're assuming a couple of things. We're assuming that a client will behave properly. We're assuming that they won't send any information from inside the network to the outside of the network. And those are assumptions you cannot make, because once a client gets WannaCry'd or once a client gets owned by any remote access technology, it's going to allow someone from the outside to act as if they are an authorized user. And if you haven't segmented your network, if you're still working on this old vision of perimeter security, it means once they're past the gateway, there's nothing to stop them.
And this has become more and more of an important thing as more and more devices connect to the internet. The Internet of Things age, as it is, where, you know, there are toaster ovens connected to the internet, the security cams, DVRs, you know, all these things that are all connected to your network, which weren't really designed in a time or with the idea that they needed to be protected, should not be talking to the rest of your network.
Right. And that's why we've moved to a new philosophy of security. And the new philosophy of security is zones or a segmented network. And what that does is it's not as if, okay, suddenly everyone is a bad guy, but it separates different clients into different areas of responsibility or areas of requirement to access network resources, so that I can ensure that every client only gets to touch the things that that client should be able to touch.
Right, right.
So, for example, in our example here, rather than doing perimeter security, in fact, I will probably still have perimeter security. So I will still have a firewall on the outside. But now I'm going to subdivide the network so that only these zones operate. So anything in this zone has access to certain resources and all the way down the line. And then I make the connections between the zones, but I have gatekeepers in between.
Right. And those machines that are in those bubbles, some of them can talk, or they can't talk to each other, right?
Right. Well, that's what you want. You want to make it so that if a user travels from one zone to the next, they have to authenticate. They need to do something in order to get access. In other words, I can't just drop into a network and suddenly have access to everything on that network.
Right, right.
Yeah. That's the way that we want to do. Now, if we were running enterprise gear, what I could do is, like what I have at home, is I could use VLANs. VLANs are a fantastic way to manage the traffic on your network, especially if, like me, you have something like an Anteris SD2, which lets me do policy, which does dynamic VLANs, which is something that we're going to talk about on Monday.
Right.
Now, that means that when a client plugs in, I can give it a default VLAN, just like the generic VLAN, and I can say, you can only see the gateway. So you can see the internet, but you can't see anything else. As that person authenticates, or as I give that person rights, they'll be able to access the other segments of the network. This is fantastic. It works incredibly well. I love my setup, but the problem is, most of us are probably not going to spend $1,000 or $5,000 on our home networks.
No. Fortunately, there are routers that come with, you could set up a guest mode and then put on AP isolation, which is kind of the same
thing, right? It's kind of good. Yeah, exactly. That is a VLAN, and that does work, but the problem is that's one.
Yeah.
So you have the guest network, and the guest network is isolated from the main network, but what do you do if you have multiple areas that you want to do? For example, I'm going to want a trusted part. I'm going to want the area that's just me and my NAS and all my devices. I might want another network for IoT devices. Like, they're the least trusted.
Right.
I just assume that they're going to be owned. Maybe I have a third network for appliances. Maybe a fourth network for guests. Maybe a fifth network for guests who I don't like. You can divide this any way you want. Now, if you've got a higher-end switch, you can set up those individual VLANs. But if you don't, and if you don't really have the willpower to learn how to write policy, write the management configurations, then, enterprise gear may not be good for you. Maybe what you want is to be able to do that same thing with routers you probably have sitting in your closet.
Yeah, so these are a pretty familiar router.
WRT54G. These are kind of ancient. I mean, when I say ancient, I mean these are 15 years old.
But they're iconic at this point.
They're kind of iconic. Yeah, you see this, you know exactly what it is. In fact, the new one, the their 2100 AC,
yes,
or their 1900 AC, they made it look like this. So the same color scheme,
but like on steroids. Yeah. It's got four antennas. It got super swole. It went and worked out for a while. I used that router for a long time. It was a great router.
It was. But you don't have to take it from us. Here is a clip from Security Now a while back when Steve Gibson first suggested that your solution might be three dumb routers.
We put each of the networks behind their own router. That constrains them to their own LAN. There and the routers block Ethernet and block ARP and any way for them to get out. So each of those networks behind their own router is able to send data out. Now, in the worst case, let's say now that one of them is malicious, it could do what I first proposed. Is it could do a trace route. If it did a trace route, it would see its own router, then it would see the shared router, which is the Y-ing router, where these separate routers, WANs, are plugged into the LAN connections of this root router. It could determine that router's gateway IP. That could tell it that intermediate network's IP numbering, but nothing is on that intermediate network, this Y network, except other routers' WAN connections, and we know those are safe because those are what right now protect us in a single router configuration from the internet. Of course, safe, assuming that those routers don't have security problems or other problems. But this gives us what we want. It means that essentially by having a single root router with then spokes off to additional routers, each of those networks, and it doesn't matter now which one is secure, which one it's not, you could have three, you could have four, you could have as many as you want, all concentrating down to a single shared root router that goes out to the internet. And each of the interior routers completely isolates its network from all the others. That's secure. I've been shying away from going this far because three routers is a bigger pain than two routers, which is a bigger pain than one router. But the beauty is they're cheap now. Probably you've got some in the closet, so it may not be a problem. That root router could be a non-Wi-Fi router. In fact, it probably does not want to be Wi-Fi unless maybe you used it for a guest network. But it's really better if it has no devices on it at all except other routers. Those are where you would want to have your Wi-Fi for your truly secure network and your probably not so secure Internet of Things network. Many of them are going to be hooked up with Wi-Fi, like the various Nest devices and so forth, you know, and the infamous light bulb that is trying to break into our network. That's the only way I can see of being secure. The beauty is this doesn't require any configuration, anything fancy, any settings of any kind. It's just it uses the basic NAT concept that all routers share. It blocks Ethernet, it routes IP, and it fully isolates the networks that are behind each of these routers so that they cannot see each other. And I don't think there is any I don't think there's a simpler way to do this. Yes, if you have a fancy router, if you've got a firewall, if you're using pfSense, you know, if you really know what you're doing, you could pull this off with a single device. But for, I think, 99.9% of us, if we're going to start playing with Internet of Things devices, give that its own router, take your main router and have them both feed into a router that goes out to the internet, then you've got isolation and you don't have to worry about any of their settings.
That's the concept in broad strokes. Mm-hmm. We've got people in the chat room who are saying, well, I have to go buy three routers. No, no, no. The whole idea here is you use three old routers. Just, yeah. You know, you've probably got a couple. If you were going to go out and buy three brand new routers, I would probably suggest you get a really good router instead.
Just one really nice one.
Except Steve does explain something that's very important here, and that is the fact that even if you get one really, really nice router, you still have to know how to configure it.
That's a good point.
And a lot of us don't. A lot of us don't put that thought into it. And if you do a bad configuration, it could actually be worse than
the old router.
The nice thing about the three dumb router is there's physically three different routers, and mm-hmm. you know exactly what's connected to what segment belongs to what.
Right.
It's a nice beginning tactic, because once you do have this set up, you're going to start thinking, could I just do that with one really good router? And then you can start mimicking right. what you want. But what this gives you is sort of a sandbox. It really gives you a physical representation of the different segments in your network, which means it makes it a whole lot easier for you to maintain.
Yeah, a whole lot easier to maintain and kind of easier for you to wrap your mind around, because you can physically know, okay, so I'm plugging point A to point B and it's only connected to this. Instead of, like, if you have a router where you're making VLANs and stuff, it's more of a, I don't know, in a less physical realm, so sometimes it's not as easy to remember or imagine.
Precisely. We're going to get into this. We're actually going to show you another step that we think you should take before you take your old routers and do the three dumb router setup, because, as we just mentioned, there is a way to do this that makes everything so much worse. We're going to help you avoid that. But before we do that, let's go ahead and take a moment for these messages. Now, Brian, Father's Day is coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you're thinking about a gift for your father or for that special person in your life, one of the things that I love is I love the fact that when I'm looking at something to give to my father, mm-hmm. I now get to act like the grown-up. I go, oh, you know what? He doesn't like toys. He wants something that's experiential. He wants something that's going to make his life better.
Well, you know, you can only get by so far with the hand-drawn cards and stuff. After about...
But it's a turkey.
It's a turkey, Dad. No. You want to get something that your dad will actually use, right?
Exactly. And you know what he could use? He could use a better shaving experience. Now, we all know what the old shaving experience looks like, right? You get the razor that's kept behind that really kind of chintzy plexiglass vault.
Because make you feel like a criminal.
Make you feel like a criminal getting them. And then you have to pay a lot of money. You have to, you know, either buy big bulk packs of the stuff and have it sitting around, or you'll get one at a time and continually go back to the store in order to get a close shave. Well, what if I told you that there was a way to not just make it convenient, but to make the shaving experience luxurious?
Well, I believe you, because I have used it.
Yeah.
And it's Harry's.
It's Harry's. Now, Harry's is not just a shaving company. They are a shaving story. Now, we know that Father's Day is around the corner and your dad's impossible to shop for, but he's going to love this. Our friends over at Harry's have a special offer that you're going to love and your dad will love too. Get $5 off one of their shave sets, including the limited edition Father's Day set. Now,
It's not that one.
It's much nicer. Now, the reason why I love this Harry's shave set is because it literally includes everything you need to get a luxurious shave. You've got the fine handle. You've got the really sharp, smooth blades. You've got the shaving gel, which I have fallen in love with this stuff. I've got like 5 bottles of this, and it's the only stuff I'll use. You know, it's funny. Back in the day, I was using any old brand shaving cream. Mm-hmm. But now that I've used this and it's scented and it just feels good, it makes me feel refreshed after I shave, I'll accept no substitutes, Brian.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, Harry's is all about a great shave at a fair price. That's exactly what they deliver. This is 5 German-crafted blades with a flex hinge and a lubricating strip. They give you a 100% quality guarantee. They'll give you a full refund if you're not happy. That's $2 a blade or less, which is half the price of the leading 5-blade razor blend. Now, Harry's shave sets start at just $15, and the razors include everything you need for a close, comfortable shave. That means that razor handle. That means the moisturizing shave gel. That means 3 of Harry's 5-blade precision-engineered razors. And for a limited time, they've got the Harry's Limited Edition Father's Day shave set that comes with a storm gray razor handle, a chrome razor stand, foaming shave gel, 3 replacement blades, and a travel cover. Plus, It comes in a sleek, giftable box with the option to add custom engraving and a personalized card for free. Folks, it's time to move past the hand turkey. It's time to move past the ashtray that you made in craft. It's time to give a gift that your dad will actually love. Give the gift of a great shave this Father's Day. For a limited time, go to harrys.com/knowhow for $5 off of one of Harry's shave sets. That's harrys.com/knowhow to get $5 off. And we thank Harry's for their support of Knowhow. Okay, Brian, so here we are with our three routers. And remember, I'm using Linksys WRT54Gs just because I had a ton of these. I had, I think 16 of them sitting in a closet.
Yep.
I still have them in active deployment. But it doesn't have to be WRT54Gs. It could be any router that you have hanging around. We need at least three. So you're going to have the core or root router. So this is my core. What this is going to do is this is the one that's going to be connecting to the internet. It needs to be the most secure because it's feeding all of the other routers, and it's the one that's facing the internet. So it needs to make sure that there are no active exploits that people could use to take this over.
Right.
Because if they get this, they get access to the sub routers.
Right. I also like that you've gone ahead and, you know, named it and put the IP
Yeah. If you're going to do this project, documentation is absolutely essential. I'm doing this because I have control of my data closet. I'm the only one who ever goes in there.
Yeah.
But if you're putting these in a common area, maybe putting the admin username and password on the box.
On the front is not a good idea.
So, yeah. But write it down someplace. You need it like in a spreadsheet.
Yeah. Okay. Keep trying.
Now, I've got a second one. So I've got the core router. I'm also going to have this. This is my trusted router. So this is the one where I'm going to put all the devices that I can trust and all the devices that I want to keep most safe. So, for example, that's my desktop. That's my laptop. That's the access point for just my devices. Mm-hmm. That's going to be my NAS box and my Sling box.
Right.
So the things that I want to access on my personal network, that's what I mean by trusted. And then I've got this. This is untrusted. So this is all the junk that I don't want to give access to my network.
Right. Things that there might be exploits for out on the internet that there's just no way to patch them, but you still want to use them. Like maybe some security cameras, maybe a storage device, maybe just people connecting to your network that you don't know.
Precisely. Exactly. So, or IoT.
Yeah.
Or like doorbells and sensors and lights. Now, the thing is, we're calling this three dumb router, but I could have a lot more. I mean, once I've got the core router, I can put as many sub routers as I want.
Right.
We talked about this before. So if I want 12 dumb routers, I can absolutely do that.
Mm-hmm.
But the question is why you have 13 routers just sort of sitting and chilling in place.
That would be a little scary.
A little bit scary.
These are pretty cheap to pick up, though, aren't they? Like, even if you want on eBay or something, I think I see these usually going for around, I don't know, 30,
yeah, and
30 bucks.
To that, I would say there's a discussion in the chat room about this. I don't know if I would pick up Linksys WRT54Gs.
If you had them laying around.
If I had them laying around or any other routers laying around, we'll talk about this in a little bit, then I might consider it. If I was going to get something just brand new, I might go with something like the MikroTik. MikroTik makes some very nice low-price routers that would be perfect for the three dumb router setup, and they are relatively new.
Okay.
They're not 15 years old.
It's hard to believe that these are 15 years old now.
I know, right?
I grew up with these.
You probably
routers.
Still have one of these sitting somewhere, yeah?
Oh, absolutely. It's the first router I tried using DDWRT on.
Which is what we want to talk about. The one caveat to doing three dumb routers is you need to make sure your router is up to date, which is not going to be easy if you have a 15-year-old router. It's actually not even Linksys anymore. It was Cisco Linksys for a while. Now it's Belkin Linksys?
I think so, yeah.
I don't know what they are anymore. But they stopped making firmware for this router in 2009.
So that was a little while ago.
It was a little while ago, which means if there are any exploits that have developed for that firmware since then, it will always be vulnerable, which is why if you're going to do this with old hardware, I would suggest you only do it with hardware that can be upgraded to DDWRT or OpenWRT.
Okay.
This is the open source firmware movement, which is why these were so popular.
Right, because it gives you access to a lot of things that you didn't have before with the prior software.
Absolutely. People were using these in enterprise. I actually saw these in a lot. In fact, I've used these in a lot of low-cost Soho offices because you can do things like install a VPN server on this.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a very good VPN server because the hardware was limited, but that was unheard of back then. I mean, yeah. This is back in the day where security was literally... just turn it off.
Just unplug it.
Just unplug it. You can't get owned if it's not plugged in.
Exactly.
Okay. And so again, this is the caveat. If you've got that 15-year-old Netgear router and it's running 10-year-old firmware and there is no chance to upgrade it, that's a throwaway.
Well, also talked about that policy you have with your NASs too. As soon as they have end-of-life service and they're not patching anymore, you take it off your network.
Yeah, exactly, right? Okay, so here's what we're going to do. I want to give you a really short video, just a quick clip on what you're going to do if your router does support OpenWRT or DDWRT.
Mm-hmm.
If it does, the procedure is going to be pretty similar for you as it is for one of these WRT54Gs. This is sort of best practices. Before you get to creating your three dumb router setup, mm-hmm. you're going to want to make sure that you've got firmware that can last. Without further ado, this is what you do with this. For our 3DUMB router, or 3DR setup, our primary source of routers will be a pile of 15-year-old Linksys WRT54Gs. These have been in storage for a while, so I want to upgrade their firmware to something a little less ownable. As one of the original open-source firmware darlings, DDWRT is a natural choice for firmware on our Linksys boxes, but it's not always as easy as downloading and patching. You first need to identify the version of each WRT54G to make sure we're going to get the firmware that is most appropriate. Version checking is as simple as navigating to the DDWRT page for the WRT54G and checking the first four characters of your router's serial number against the chart. In my case, I have a single version 1 and two version 4 units, one of them being a G and the other being a GS. Make sure to double-check your version as loading the wrong firmware on your router may brick the device. This is custom firmware, which means not everything will work without a hitch. For example, my version 154G is so old that I couldn't directly upgrade to the latest DDWRT firmware. Instead, I had to first load the stock Linksys firmware, then load DDWRT. You'll need to find the proper way to do it with whatever routers you're using. A little tricky for me, since Linksys no longer offers that firmware for download off their site, but nothing a little Google search couldn't fix. Again, take your time and get it right. You may not get a second chance if you brick the device. Once we've got the firmware that we'll be installing, it's time for a 30-30-30 on our 54Gs. This is a procedure to completely reset the router, from the config to the NVRAM. It's the best practice before an upgrade and a great way to wipe away any ancient configurations that I had on my old routers. With the power on, hold down the reset button for 30 seconds. While still holding down the reset button, disconnect power for 30 seconds. Again, still holding down the reset button, reconnect power and continue to hold the button for another 30 seconds. After the 30-30-30, you should be able to get back into your router and see that everything has been reset to firmware stock. If you can't get in, it just means that your router isn't serving DHCP. Set a static IP on your computer of 192.168.1.100 with a subnet mask of 255.255.255.0. This should give you access to the default /24, and you'll be able to get to the admin page at 192.168.1.1. Once your router is reset and you're back into the user interface, navigate to the Administration tab and select the firmware that you just downloaded. Check the option to reset to default, then start the upgrade process. The process will take a few minutes. If you're connected to the internet, you'll lose your connection as the update continues, but do not disconnect power unless you want a brick. Once the interface is again available, we'll set our login credentials and will then be dropped into the system information screen. Make sure to document the login credentials that you created, then repeat the process on the other routers in your 3DR setup. Get everything up to date, but leave all your settings at their default. That configuration is coming up. Now, it should be mentioned mm-hmm. that the firmware on these DDWRTs is not all that up to date either.
Yeah.
I think the last update for this group in general was in 2015. Mm. But it's still a whole lot better than 2009.
Yeah, so maybe using it as your core router wouldn't be such a good idea. But, you know, in a pinch and for doing this project, they're still good.
Precisely. And in the chat room, you've got people like Neo and I think it was Specs, who are saying MicroTik. And yeah, I love MicroTik. And if MicroTik is willing to send us some gear to play with, I would love to show it off on the show. But, you know, that is something that I would buy.
Right.
This is something that I already have. And I'm not saying go out and buy three DDWRT-capable routers. Mm-hmm. You can get any three routers that you want. Hopefully, you've got them in your inventory.
Right.
And you know, this is, it's a fun training project. If you can create a network that makes you learn something, that's a good thing.
Yeah. Well, it looks like you have something written on the board. Are we getting to that?
We're going to get to that. We're going to be setting up a little something. We need a way to actually link these together in a way that's going to make sense.
Yeah.
But before we do that, let's go ahead and take another moment for these messages. I know that it's hard to eat right. I get it. It's too easy to get fast food. It's too easy to get snacks. My personal pet peeve right now, Brian, is that Lowe's late at night sessions, which I do a lot because that's when I do my editing. That's when I do my recording.
Right.
And you just get peckish. Like 2 a.m, you feel like having a snack, and you always eat the most unhealthy garbage possible.
Yeah, and it's usually because I don't want to go to the grocery store and stock up.
Yeah,
right?
Ain't nobody got time for that.
No.
I mean, look. I've got busy days. I like 12 to 16 hour days. I need to be working. And for me to go to the grocery store and to get the ingredients, then bring them back, and then find time in our kitchen to actually cook them, it's not appealing.
But what you do like to cook.
I do. I love cooking because there's something, it's that creative element. Even if what I cook ends up not being great, that's a learning point for me to cook something better next time.
Exactly. You're building a meal. You're crafting something.
It's doing for food what we're trying to do with routers right now.
Exactly.
This
but
is
you don't
three
have to
dumb
have three
entrees.
Of them. Yeah. And they're delicious.
Now, folks, of course, we are talking about Blue Apron. Blue Apron is the best way, the easiest way to make sure that you can cook in the time that you have, to make sure that you can cook healthy, and most importantly, so that you can learn to perfect your craft of the eats. Now, Blue Apron knows that not all ingredients are created equal. They rely on fresh, high-quality ingredients that make the difference in the flavor of their brand. So it's important to know where your food comes from, and Blue Apron always tells you. They set the highest quality standards for the community of over 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranchers across the United States. For less than $10 per person per meal, think about that, $10 per person per meal. When's the last time you were able to shop and have that kind of savings? Blue Apron will deliver seasonal recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals in 40 minutes or less. And by shipping the exact amount of each ingredient required for a recipe, Blue Apron is reducing food waste. No more, there's that little bit of extra something that I'm going to keep in the spice drawer until it goes bad and I throw it out. Or that thing that ends up in the refrigerator because I might use it even though I know I'm not going to and it ends up in the garbage. Blue Apron gives you the right amount every time along with their recipes. Now, their freshness guarantee promises that every ingredient in your delivery arrives ready to cook or they'll make it right. Their mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everybody. They deliver to 99% of the continental U.S. There's no weekly commitment, so you only get deliveries when you want them. And you can customize your recipes each week based on your dietary preferences. Most importantly, they're helping you to learn to cook for yourself. You'll start to see the interactions between different ingredients, between spices. You'll become curious. You will become a foodie. And that, folks, is a good thing. When you can put away the junk food, when you can put away the snacks, when you can have hand-cooked, healthy meals, that's when Blue Apron is satisfied. Now, you can choose from a variety of new recipes each week or let Blue Apron's culinary team surprise you. Their upcoming meals include warm smoked trout and asparagus salad with fingerling potatoes and garlic croutons, spiced zucchini enchiladas with creamy lime and tomato sauce, elote-style vegetable tostadas with summer squash, poblano peppers, and cilantro rice, or how about peach honey glazed chicken with mashed sweet potatoes, collard greens, and Thai basil? You can get it all and more at Blue Apron. Now, you can check out this week's menu and get 3 meals free with your first purchase and free shipping by going to blueapron.com/knowhow. You'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. Don't wait. Start eating healthy today and get knowledge on cooking by going to blueapron.com/knowhow. That's blueapron.com/knowhow. Blue Apron, it's a better way to cook. And we thank Blue Apron for their support of Know How. Okay, Brian, so here we have our upgraded routers.
Right.
These are all set to go. Now we need to figure out how we're actually going to wire them. And it's nice to have them in a stack, but right now they're they're probably not passing too many packets.
No, it's not. No power, nothing plugged in, but it's probably a good idea to map out what we want to do.
It is a good idea to map out. So when we finally wire this up, this is what it's going to look like. I've got the internet up here. I'm going to drop down into my core router. Remember, right. The core router is the one that I want to be most secure because it's actually facing the internet. This is the one that people can probe. This is the one that they can poke. If it is exploitable, then they can get in here, and now they have access to the internal network. That's a bad thing.
Right. And so would you recommend if you're running a core router, should you do shields up just to be sure?
Yeah. You always run it against the point that is most vulnerable. And in your network, the point that is most vulnerable
is that one.
Is the point that touches the internet, because that's where the attacks are going to come from.
Okay,
so once I get my core router, I'm going to have these two routers underneath it. I've got my trusted and my untrusted. Now, this is important. Nothing else goes on the core router, the LAN side of the core router, other than the other two routers, or the three routers.
Right.
Do not connect a game console to this. Do not connect a camera to this. Because the whole idea is that even if someone owns this router, all they will be able to see are the other two routers.
Okay.
And now they'll have to attack those in order to try to get to something that's
to get to the next layer. Yeah.
Right. This is one of these things where it does help to have the physical router rather than some virtual thing. Because now I can see, is there something plugged into this router that's not a router? If that's true, then I've messed up my configuration. I need to fix that.
Okay.
Now, before we get into actually connecting these, let's look at the configuration. Now, two of these I've already pre-configured, so I wouldn't have to do them on the show. Mm-hmm. But let's go ahead and do the third one, which is the untrusted network. So I have not yet configured the untrusted router.
Okay.
This should give us an idea of what it should look like in the final configuration.
Okay.
There are a couple of rules that we're going to follow to make this just a little bit easier for people to configure. Now, this is not the end-all be-all. You could go crazy with your configuration once you start learning how it works. But the setup I'm going to give you is sort of the bare minimum. This will make it actually work on your computer.
Okay.
All right, so let's go ahead. And Alex, if you go to my computer, let's see if this is actually set up. It's going to take a while for it to get an IP address. Are you home? You're not home yet. Hold on.
Well, we just plugged it in. Give the old girl a chance.
Now it's live. Okay. So this is fresh. This is new firmware. Unfortunately, this is from 2009. Aww. But it's still DDWRT.
Yeah.
And I did patch this. So it's got...
So it's better, way better than the stock firmware.
Oh, the stock firmware was horrible. Okay. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go step by step to show you all the different things that you need to change. The first part is under basic setup. So under my setup tab, I'm probably going to put a... There we go. There's a few things I want to change. The first thing I'm going to change is the router name. So this is going to be the untrusted segment, so I'm going to call it untrusted. Or is that... untrusted. The second thing I'm going to want to change is the local IP address. This is a /24. You don't need to know what that is right now. If you want to figure it out, go back to our Networking 101 episodes where we're talking about routing. /24 just means I have 256 or actually 254 addresses available to me.
Right.
Starting at the number I give here. This is important. You want to have an addressing scheme that makes sense to you. For me, my core router is 192.168.10.1. My trusted router is 192.168.20.1. My untrusted network is 192.168.30.1. And the reason why I'm doing this is because no matter what device I plug into any router, I will automatically know which one it is by 10, 20, or 30.
Yeah, that makes sense. They have, really keeping track.
Yes, and they have to be different ranges. You can't have all of them 192.168.1.1. And the reason for that is, remember, I'm going from one router to the next. So if I have a device, if you come back to the wide, Alex, if I have a device that is here, And this is 192.168.1.1.
And so is that.
This is 192.168.1.1. This device has no idea which is actually the gateway. They both come up as 192.168.1.1.
Right.
That's bad.
Right. But as segmenting it, which the trusted would be, would you say 20.1?
Yeah, so this is 10, this is 20, this is 30.
30. So, yeah, it'll be like, okay, go to 20 and then go to 10. Yeah.
Precisely. So if you go back to my computer, what I'm going to do is I'm going to change this, since this is the untrusted network, to 30.1. My gateway is actually going to be right here, 192.168.10. 10.
Is tab not working?
The tab is not working. Tab, that one. And then my local DNS, I'm actually going to leave that at 8.8.8.8, which is Google.
Actually, that's what I use. Yeah. And then the backup is 8.8.4.4.
Right. Or OpenDNS, which is 208.67.220.220 or 222.222.
Ah.
It's weird how you come to memorize these things.
Yeah, after you've played with your network for enough times, you start to memorize these numbers.
Right. Now, you don't have to use that. You could use your favorite DNS service. Or if you have a decent core router, like I actually have a router that does have a DNS caching server built into it, mm-hmm. I use that. So I would set it for 192.168.10.1.
Right.
But in this particular case, I'm going to use Google instead. All right, so we want to save that. By going to the bottom, do not apply. If you apply, what will happen on DDWRT is it actually reboots the router when we don't want that noise right now.
Ah, okay.
Okay. So the next thing is I'm going to go up to wireless. I always start with disabling, especially on these older routers. I don't like the access points. I will turn them on later on if I need to, but I typically like to save Wi-Fi for the devices that have more advanced wireless, like AC.
Right, okay.
Just because, remember, even though it's not AC, it's still going to be generating RF interference in the 2.4 gigahertz range. Right. I don't need that. So I've shut off the wireless on all three of these.
Okay. Makes sense.
I can turn them back on if I need it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so the next one is under services. I'm going to go to services right here. And I want to do two things. I want to disable Telnet, which is a way to allow me to get into the router via Telnet. I'm not going to use that. This mm-hmm. is, again, I can turn this on later on, but right now, remember what we said in Networking 101, if you're not using the service, turn it off.
Right.
And I'm also going to turn off the WAN traffic counter. And the reason why we're going to do that is because next week I'm going to show people how to use TAPS, and that's actually how you want to do that. So I'm going to save those. So those are saved. The next one I'm going to want to do is under administration. So I'm going to go to administration, and I'm going to do a few things here. First thing is I'm going to go ahead and disable cron. Cron is Linux scripting. I'm not going to do any scripting right now. You could turn this back on if you plan to do something mm-hmm. with Linux scripting, like mess with IP tables, but I'm not going to do that in this particular example. I'm also going to turn off 802.1x. This particular router is using 802.1x as a way to validate computers, especially XP computers, using mm-hmm. WPA on the wireless. Since I turned off the wireless, I don't need it.
Okay.
And then I'm going to save it. So these
are... Oh, you can disable the reset button, too?
Oh, yeah.
Huh, that's interesting. I guess that'd be kind of like a security thing. Like,
it would be a security thing in case you aren't anywhere near the router.
Yeah, you don't want someone fiddling with the settings.
Right, but again, these are in my closet.
Yeah, so
I'm the only one with access to them. And then I'm going to go ahead and reboot the router. So once this router reboots, it's going to have all those settings as its parameters.
Right.
Okay. Now, while it's doing that, let's go ahead and start taking a look at how we're going to wire this up.
Okay.
So, of course, this orange wire here, this is the internet.
Yeah, and you're color-coding things, which
I'm
helps.
Color-coding,
yeah.
Which helps. So, if you look at the back, go to the side view here. If you look at the back, like all routers, I've got my WAN port and I've got my LAN ports. So let's start with the WAN port on the core. This is my core router. Mm-hmm. This is 192.168.10.1. Internet is going to go into the WAN, so just like normal.
Yep.
Right? Now let's go ahead and look at the trusted network. So this is my trusted network, 192.168.20.1. Mm-hmm. The WAN port on this,
boom,
like this, so that would be the internet on the core,
right.
Is actually going to go to a LAN port
mm-hmm.
here. So it's now inside. This router, this trusted router, is inside this network.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
Right, so that's trusted. And then we've got untrusted. And untrusted, once it finishes finishes rebooting, what we're going to do is the LAN port, the WAN port here, is just like the trusted router, going to connect to one of the LAN ports. So this is what my finished setup looks like. Internet is coming into the core at the bottom, mm-hmm. and then I've got two connections going out from the LAN ports on this to the WAN ports on my other routers.
Right, just like you drew out on the diagram.
Just like I drew out on the diagram. Super simple, but here's the advantage of doing it physically rather than a higher-end router, and mm-hmm. that is I can see what's plugged into it.
Right, and now you can plug in other things and physically know, okay, this one, this untrusted one is plugged into this, the trusted one is plugged into this, and now we can delegate easily.
Absolutely. I'm going to go ahead and refresh my addresses here because it's got a, because I just changed the IP range.
Oh, right.
So it went from 192.168.1.1 to 192.168.30.1. Yeah. So this is going to get a new address from it. Now, let's talk a little bit about the things that I'm going to need to work properly. Hold on. And it is, yep, it's up.
Nice.
In order for this to work. Let's jump back into my configuration page right over here, Alex, if you would. I'm going to change this to 30.1. There Boom. We go. So I'm back up. And now I am at the right address. So cool. I'm at 192.168.30.115, and the gateway is 10.1. And okay. just to prove that it actually works, let's go ahead and open up a web page here. Let's go to Twit. Not Twitter. So it's routing.
Traffic is going from the untrusted to the core, which is then going to the internet.
Technically, it's going to our router over here. Which is some fun stuff here. But this is the three dumb router in a pinch. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about what we'd actually want to do to make this network really, really usable. I'm probably going to want a few more. Because right now, I've got my core. And remember, into the core, nothing gets plugged in except other routers.
Right.
I've also got my trusted. So my trusted is going to be my computers. Mm-hmm. So my desktop, my laptop, my NAS, anything that I want access just for myself.
Right.
Maybe I'm going to have my untrusted be for IoT devices. So any IoT device, which I'm going to assume is owned,
right.
I'm going to assume it's compromised, goes on the untrusted network.
Right.
But that's a huge gap between trusted and untrusted. What about all the stuff that comes in the middle? Like, for example, TVs, mm-hmm. appliances, your game console. Maybe I want a semi-trusted network.
Right.
Maybe I want another one for a guest network. And the guest network, maybe I dual home my NAS box mm-hmm. so that guests can get access to the internet and they can also get access to a share that I open up on the NAS for them.
Right.
This is when it becomes fun because it's all physical. I can actually see the cables. Yeah. The cables, you got to remember, when I'm talking about VLANs, it's mm-hmm. just like cables, but they're virtual. You can't see them.
Right.
In this particular case, I actually can see the cables. It's much easier to learn this way.
Yeah, it makes a lot more sense that way. And I guess you could still do VLANs and stuff and have dumb routers hooked up.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Well, see, that's the nice thing. Once you start with this, you will reach a point where you say, I've outgrown it.
Right.
This no longer does what I needed to do. That's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. It means you can actually take advantage of a higher-end router. You may ask why I didn't include my favorite router on this, the Synology 2600. Well, mm-hmm. the Synology 2600, honestly, is overkill for this. Mm-hmm. The 2600 could do all of this inside of itself.
Right.
And a lot of those, better.
A lot of those things that you disabled in the firmware yeah. on this already come disabled. Right? Like out yep. of the box. Because there's a lot of things. I use the 1900 Synology, and there's a lot of things on that it's like, well, if you're not going to use it, it's going to be disabled by default.
Right, right. Oh, and by the way, people are saying that you can fry a radio by not having its antennas attached. Absolutely. Which is why on this one, which is the only one that wasn't configured yet, I had antennas. But now that I've disabled the radios,
now you can take
I
out
don't
the
need
antennas,
them because yeah. that's not transmitting anything.
Just remember to not turn on the wireless without the antennas on.
Yeah. yeah. Well, because what's happening is you're pushing out power, but there's nothing to take the load. And
right.
so it just kind of goes, okay, I guess I'll just die.
And it burns itself out. Yeah,
which is fun.
No, not fun.
Not fun at all. A few other things about this. if you're going to do a three dumb router setup, and I know there are people in the chat room like Eric Duckman who are saying, but you know, these are all 10/100. Absolutely, that's why you put a switch behind them. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about this before. The router is not a great switch.
No.
So if you're going to be pushing a lot of traffic, you put a switch behind the router for that particular network.
That makes sense.
Now, does this mean that if I have, say, five different networks behind my core router that I need five different switches? No. Yes, you do. unless you're okay with the 10/100 speed. If you want gigabit Ethernet, you're going to have to drop one gig switch behind each. But you cannot share them. You cannot put two routers into one switch. The devices that are connected to that switch would be confused beyond belief because which address it gets would depend on which of the servers responds faster.
Right, and it would just lose its mind.
It would lose its ever-loving mind. You'd also get into a loop condition because you have two routers that are trying to serve out on the same network.
Mm-hmm.
They both think that they're the gateway. It makes for fun times.
Yeah, and the thing I like about this project, too, is if any one of these routers gets hosed, it won't affect anything else connected to the other routers because it has to get through the other one.
Precisely, exactly. That's the advantage of doing this. I can pretty much guarantee that with my taps, I will be able to see weirdness. Mm-hmm. Because if I see it from one router and I'm not seeing it from the other, there's something wrong with that particular segment.
Right.
This saves me the step of having to troubleshoot by actually digging down into the packets. I can go, oh, wow, the untrusted network keeps trying to contact this domain. Hmm. There's something on the untrusted network that's owned.
Yeah. No, pretty cool. It's a really good way to lay things out and wrap your mind around it.
It is a good way, but we won't have this complete until next week. Because next week we're going to go into some of my favorite networking tools, specifically about a device that I'm actually not allowed to mention right now because it's still under embargo, and also taps. This is the perfect place to start practicing with taps because I can now isolate individual network segments. And I can say, I only want to see what my IoT traffic looks like right now. Hmm. I only want to see what my personal traffic looks like now. Or I only want to see what my appliance traffic looks like.
Right.
That's what a trap is very good for. And doing a hardware solution like three dumb routers means it's very easy for me to figure out what traffic I'm tapping at what time.
Okay. Yeah, I love that idea.
Yeah.
Cool.
That's what's coming up next week. But folks, if you've got any questions about what we did with three dumb routers, what you need to do is to go to our show page, which, Brian, where do we put that?
Whoa, man. Oh, wait, I think I know. It's twit.tv/KH. And you can find all the information Padre talked about and probably, information to, like, when Steve talked about it, too, if you want to watch that Security Now episode. That was back in 2016. It doesn't seem like it was that long ago.
Right?
But not only do the show notes live there, but you can download and subscribe to the episode.
Yeah, and which you need to do because, folks, we want to grow the Keto community. We need your help. Pass us along to friends. If they're interested in anything that we do here on KnowHow, that's networking, that's making, it's 3D printing, it's playing with microcontrollers, we want more fans. We want more people so that we can do more and more projects. Help us out. Again, twit.tv/KH. Now, don't forget that we also have a community online. That community is the most active in the entire Twit army. All you need to do is go to Google Plus and look for KnowHow. There's a very short approval process, but once you're in, you get access to over 11,000 know-it-alls. These are the people who, like you, are in every stage of their maker journey. Maybe they're beginners. Maybe they have questions. Maybe you're an expert and you can answer their questions. Or maybe you just want to show off and give us pictures and videos of your latest project. Again, go to Google Plus and look for KnowHow.
That's right. I expect to see some people posting about their dumb routers that they have and see how they've set up their network. But if you want to figure out what we're doing outside of the show or what projects we might be working on or other shows that we have projects for, because we do segments for the new screensavers, the best place to find that is on Twitter, and I am @cranky_hippo.
And you can find me @PadreSJ. And you can find the third member of our crew, who always takes one for the team. We call him Yamcha. You can find me Yamcha at twitter.com/ANELF3.
Excuse me, Padre. Pronounced Alex.
What?
You know, that's something that Yamcha would say.
Totally. That's such
that
a Yamcha.
So Yamcha.
You got us again.
What a jerk.
Until next time, I am Father Robert Ballasaire.
And I'm Brian Burnett.
And now that you know how,
go dumb router it. Go dumb route it.
Maybe the show title should be Three Dumb Hosts.
Well, three dumb hosts.